Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog.
This is the preview spotlight for the June 2012 previews. These items should start hitting shops around August 2012. As always, we're going to go from the beginning to the back. We're not going to go page by page or anything of the sort, because that would just be crazy. There's still a ton of stuff in these previews. I mean, at one point they said they were going to pare it down, but it's still about 500 pages for the main catalog and another 100 plus for the Marvel one, so ton of reading every month just for that. We encourage listener submissions for these episodes. We want to hear what you guys are thinking, get a feel for, again, where your tastes are, what you're reading, and sometimes that talks us into getting a couple of things we wouldn't have otherwise gotten. So these episodes really kind of hinge very much on listener participation. Again, open submission policy on that. The deadline is not the Friday after previews comes out, but the following Friday, so 9 days later. And then that same night is when we do a previews teleconference. We get on, we go through previews pretty much, not cover to cover, but from the beginning all the way back through the other comics section. Tons of digressions. We'll talk about pretty much whatever comes up. I always find those to be pretty fun and stuff. Because I'm going to be on the road in July heading for San Diego, I'm probably going to miss that one, but oh well. Be the first one I've actually missed, and we've been doing those calls for 5-6 years? That'll be number 57 of the preview spotlight, so, yeah. And we've been doing it longer than that. So
yeah, we've been doing it before we recorded, so yeah. 5 years.
So, should we start listening to clips?
Sure. Looking forward to hearing what people have to say. Well, first up for me this month is on page 30 from Dark Horse Comics. We've got a one-shot, Beasts of Burden, Neighborhood Watch, from the team of Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson. Adventure, mystery, horror, and humor thrive on every page of this Eisner Award-winning Beast of Burden comic. The four-legged occult investigating team, the heroic gang of dogs and one cat, are doing their best to protect their home, Burden Hill, from a chicken-stealing goblin, a frightful basilisk, and a strange lost herd of sheep. If you haven't checked out Beasts of Burden before, you're really missing out. Jill Thompson's watercolor paintings on every page are just wonderful to behold. It's a great all-ages series that is just perfect for adults and kids alike. It's got a little bit of horror mystery, but not anything that a 7 or 8 year old couldn't handle. Really, really highly recommended. Check out this one shot if you've not checked it out before, and maybe that will lead you into picking up some of the past collections of this wonderful all-ages series.
Next up on page 84 is Flash Annual number 1. Now, Francis Manapul, who's been doing the book on the monthly side, is doing the annual. Brian Bussolato is helping out on that, as he's been doing on the writing chores for the main series. So, same creative team for the annual as the main series. That's always a good sign. And this is dealing with the Rogues. Part of what's made the Flash kind of a unique character in the DC universe is not just that he's got a colorful assortment of villains, because, I mean, let's face it, most of the heroes do, but that these villains basically act as a team at times. There's a fraternity of them, if you will, that, you know, hang out and both bemoan the defeats they've had at the hand of the Flash and, you know, team up to fight against him at times. And the Rogues as a group has always been a unique aspect of the Flash mythos. And this is going to be technically the second time we see them in the new 52 universe, because the Flash 12, which ships a week earlier, is going to set up the Rogues as a team for the next major storyline. And then it looks like this annual is really where that's going to kick into high gear. It looks like we get Weather Wizard, Captain Cold, Heatwave, and Mirror Master. And I'm not quite sure if it's the Golden Glider or who some of those others are, maybe the top. So it looks like we're going to get new takes on a lot of the classic Flash villains. I'm very much looking forward to that. Again, same creative team as usual. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS on this. It is a $4.99 cover price, but that brings it down through DCBS to a fairly manageable amount. I'm really liking what Francis Manapul's been doing on the Flash. I like the character, I like the rogues, so I mean, this seems like a no-brainer. So hopefully it'll be fairly accessible just as a standalone issue. If you're looking for an excuse to try the Flash, this is a good opportunity. Next up on page 117 is Phantom Lady number 1. This is the first of a 4-issue limited series. It's being written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, arts by Kat Staggs and Rich Perotta. And this is featuring, obviously, Phantom Lady, the female freedom fighter. She's getting, you know, obviously her own miniseries here. This is a new version of the character. It looks very, very different from the original and the subsequent versions. The last time Phantom Lady was seen, she was a member of Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters group that Gray and Palmiotti had done over the course of a couple of different miniseries and stuff, which was always a great read. I'm looking forward to this. We also get Doll Man as her partner in crime fighting. This is a guy who's just doll size. Kind of sort of like the Atom, except he can't change size. He's just kind of stuck at that, you know, 1 foot height or what have you. So, covers are being done by Amanda Connor, but only the covers. So, you know, that's unfortunate because I think it'd be great for her to do the interior art as well. This is something that's going to be very interesting to see how the sales are, because this is one of the few kind of miniseries that we've been seeing DC do lately after the first round or two, and most of those hit with lackluster sales. Again, I'm a big fan of Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti. I like the Freedom Fighters as characters. I think Phantom Lady is going to be an interesting one to do as a 4-issue miniseries. I hope this works out. I'm looking forward to it. It's a $2.99 cover price. DCBS has it at 50% off, so it'll set you back $1.49 if you get it through DCBS. And if you're going to get it locally, just tell your local retailer, hey, you're interested in this, because this is something they might order kind of tight on and not want to take a chance on. So if you want it, let your retailer know.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, a fan of this podcast, and this month I am looking forward to a comic book called Rocketeer Cargo of Doom, number 1 of 4 from IDW. It's on page 149 of the previews catalog. It's written by Mark Wade with art by Chris Samney. And the story is as follows. A ship docks in Los Angeles Harbor from a far-off and exotic locale with a big, mysterious, and living cargo. Danger and mayhem abound as our hero leaps into the fray. Plus, we introduce a lovely new character who will be vying against Betty for Cliff's affections. Sounds like a good story to me. I've really been enjoying the Rocketeer Adventures, which is like an anthology series of all different top creators doing real short stories, but been looking forward to this longer form story in this miniseries. Of course, Mark Wade is the writer who most certainly recently been writing Daredevil for Marvel, which I've really been enjoying, so that makes me also look forward to this comic. And it was got art by Chris Samney, who has been doing a lot of work for Marvel most recently, and really been enjoying his artwork over there on titles like Daredevil, Captain America. And this is coming, going to be released on August 22nd, the price of $3.99, but if you order it through DCBS, it'll be 50% off for $1.99. Once again, the comic is called Rocketeer Cargo of Doom. It's a number 1 from IDW, and I really look forward to it. Thanks, Bob.
Next up on page 164 is a title Bob and I have talked about before and will no doubt talk about again. We'll probably review even this particular issue, and that's Loving Capes, What to Expect, number 1 of 6. Now, Loving Capes is done by Tom Zoller. He does the writing, the art, the covers, you name it, he does it, and he does a fantastic job. The basic premise is you've got the Crusader, who's, you know, kind of a Superman type, and his girlfriend, now wife, Abby, they're expecting a baby, which is the what to expect aspect of the title, of course. This is something that is essentially, remember the old Helen Hunt, Paul Reiser, Mad About You sitcom, TV series and stuff? That same sort of romantic comedy or whatever, but with superheroes. It's kind of a, again, Lois and Clark as a romantic sitcom versus a, you know, action-adventure thing. And it's done well, exceedingly well. Every issue is highly accessible. Tom Zoller tends to do these as, I think originally he puts them on the web even. I'm not positive about that, though, but usually it's something where every page has at least two story beats where, you know, you get the first two rows, okay, you know, clear thing happens, the bottom of the thing, clear thing happens, as if it were kind of two web panel or web comics, you know, daily strips or what have you. While that seems a little mechanical or whatever, think about it for a minute. You get, say, 20 pages a story, at least two story beats per page, that's 40 story beats. You wind up with something that just a lot happens in these issues without seeming rushed, without seeming forced. It moves along, and again, you could come in probably in the middle of an issue even and understand what's going on because he resets the scene effectively and I don't say transparently, but this has got to be the most accessible, the most enjoyable kind of a comic out there on such a consistent basis. This is one of my favorite comics. This is something that I would love to see come out more often, but I mean, again, Tom Zoller's doing all the work on this, and he's just one guy. Go listen to some of the past reviews Bob and I have done on the various Loving Capes, both the ongoing, it was quarterly at one point, the previous miniseries they did, and we always give you know high ratings to this. It is an excellent series. I always enjoy talking with Tom Zoller at San Diego Con. He is a great guy. I cannot speak highly enough of this. If the concept of a superhero romantic comedy, you know, interests you in the least, or even if you think it might be a train wreck and you're curious about it, I mean, tell yourself whatever you need to. Pick this up. I think you will enjoy it. It's very well done. It's just, again, one of the best books out there, I think, and I don't think Tom Zoller gets anywhere near enough recognition for it. So, you know, when we saw there was going to be the new miniseries, it's like, we gotta have this as one of our DCBS picks. We gotta talk about this on the preview spotlight. We gotta make sure as many people know about this as possible. So pick it up, tell your friends, tell your local retailer what a great book it is. Again, there are three trade paperbacks of it out. They're only $19.99 for the trade paperbacks. This is a $3.99 first issue. Well, it's IDW, so all the issues are going to be $3.99. Well worth the money, no questions asked. One thing I will say, when Tom Zoller was doing this through his own publishing company and stuff, what he did for a couple of years is he had that issue that came out that quarter as a free comic book day issue. Think about that. You put out four issues a year and you're giving one of them away? I mean, the guy is nuts, but nuts in a great way. So again, Loving Capes, What to Expect, number 1 of 6. It's a $3.99 book. It's from IDW. It's on page 164. It gets as many thumbs up as I can give away giving it, you know, get away with giving it. Excellent book. A lot of fun. Check it out. Let us know what you think. I think it's, like I said, absolutely brilliant. 50% off through DCBS, so $1.99. Definitely worth the money at that price, certainly still at the $3.99. This is one of the best bangs for the buck I think is out there. So I've probably gushed about it enough. Go put it on your order form. Tell your retailer you want it. Pick it up. Read it. Enjoy it. Let us know what you think.
Hey guys, it's Damien here from LordShaper.com with my first pick of the month, which is Black Kiss 2, number 1, with story, art, and cover by Howard Schaken. Now, 25 years ago, he released Black Kiss. Now, to be honest, this is one I've always meant to pick up and always meant to actually read because everyone holds it in high esteem, and it's just something that I really want to actually, you know, get hold of just because he brought the 80s to a close with it. It's an erotic thriller. you know, it just sort of calls out something that I should read at least once in my life. But with this new miniseries coming out, so we've got 24 pages. He's doing it in black and white, so it's $2.99, and it's a 6-issue miniseries. I want to pick this one up just because, you know this one's going to be linked to it. It's going to be a classic. People are going to be talking about it. Good or bad, I want to get my hands on this one anyway. So there's been a few things that I've actually finished up that I want to find something new for, and this is what it's going to be. So this is one I'm going to recommend picking up. I can't tell you what page in previews it is, unfortunately, because I haven't picked up my previews yet, but I've got to get my recordings done. So yeah, definitely check it out. I know it will be put in the right position, but hey, you know, $2.99, how can you go wrong for Howard Chaykin story, art and cover? Okay, then let's go back to the guys.
On page 186, we've got the first of two new series from Image Comics that I'm very interested in this month. This one's called Think Tank Number 1. It's got a story by Matt Hawkins and art by Rasan Ekedal and Brian Reber. Rasan has done a lot of things that I've really enjoyed. Most notably, he worked with Josh Fialkov on the Echoes miniseries, did some fabulous art on that. In this new series, Think Tank, we're fighting the man with science. Dr. David Lorne is many things. Child prodigy, inventor, genius, slacker, and, mass murderer. When a military think tank's smartest scientist decides he can no longer stomach creating weapons of destruction, will he be able to think his way out of his dilemma or find himself subject to the machinations of smaller men? Sounds like a cool series. I'll be checking it out. Just one of the two new series from Image this month that I'm very interested in seeing. And on page 188 is the second Image series that I'm very interested in checking out. This one's called Harvest. It's got story by A.J. Lieberman and the art by Colin Lorimer. Human traffickers, rogue medical teams, Yakuza-run organ mills, and a 6-year-old drug fiend. Welcome to Dr. Benjamin Dane's nightmare. His only way out? Bring down the man who set him up by reclaiming organs already placed in some very powerful people. If Dexter, ER, and 100 Bullets had a 3-way, and that mind-blowing tryst somehow resulted in a kid, that kid would read Harvest. Look for some medical-grade revenge coming in August from Harvest Number 1. Now, I'm going to have to add on to that I've actually read Harvest Number 1. I have an interview with AJ and Colin coming up on the interview episode. I talked to both of them, and they were kind enough to send me a review copy of this comic, and it was really good. I personally would give it a 5 out of 5 and really recommend this for people that like pretty much what that description just said. Nice mystery intrigue. It's got a horror edge, but not supernatural horror, just kind of like that psychological kind of horror that you get from a movie like Seven. The art just blew me away, what Colin Lorimer was doing. You'll hear more about that if you listen to the interview episode, but I urge you, if this is the kind of story that you like, kind of hard-hitting mystery and horror, check this out, Harvest Number 1.
Next up, we're going to jump into the Marvel previews for actually just this one pick this month. I'm wondering if that's a sign of a lot of our listeners just being a little, I don't say disenfranchised with Marvel, but just not that excited about it, which, you know, on the one hand, I can kind of understand, but on the other hand, Marvel is putting out a lot of really great books. I mean, this month alone, they had about 4 books by Alan Davis, whose art is just phenomenal. Alas, we're not going to talk about any one of those 4. What I'm going to talk about is on page 40 and 41 of the Marvel previews, and that's Hawkeye Number 1. This is by Matt Fraction, art by David Aya. I may be mispronouncing that, and again, I apologize for that if that's the case. Hawkeye, of course, breakout star from the Avengers movie, or so I'm told. I still haven't watched the movie yet. I'll get around to it. Hawkeye is just a fun character. Now, if you're wondering which version we get, if we get the classic or if we get the one with the Young Avengers, don't worry, we get both. It's obviously going to star primarily the the Hawkeye, Clint Barton and stuff, but Kate Bishop from the Young Avengers is going to be essentially his sidekick here, I guess. And it seems like the basic take here is Hawkeye feels the need to prove himself as one of Earth's mightiest heroes. Now, when you're hanging around with a god, you know, somebody with the highest tech suit of armor on the planet, you know, somebody who's the best there is at what he does sort of thing, you know, with Wolverine and whatnot, a guy with a bow and arrow, I could see where he might feel he has something to prove. I don't think, I mean, he's going to have a hard time with that. I mean, Hawkeye's been a key Avenger and leader of the Thunderbolts there for a while. So, fun character, a lot of story opportunity here. They've got a couple of sample pages on page 40 here of the Marvel previews. I think it's going to be fun. I hope, you know, I mean, this is the same team that did the Immortal Iron Fist series that people really liked. So we've got a new ongoing series here starring Hawkeye. It seems like a good combination of creators, characters, etc. Should be fun. Check it out. There is a 50% discount through DCBS. It's a $2.99 book, so it sets you back $1.49 through DCBS. Given how tight a lot of stores are ordering these days, if you're getting it from your local retailer, don't just assume he's going to have stacks and stacks of Hawkeye number one. If you want it, let them know. That way they're sure to have a copy for you. It helps you out. You get the comic. It helps the store out because they know they've got a sale and they can order more accurately. Everybody wins. Again, Matt Fraction, David Aya on Hawkeye number one. Worth checking out. Next up on page 245 is New Crusaders Rise of the Heroes number one. This is from the Red Circle Comics imprint of Archie Comics. Archie, of course, has owned these characters forever and a day. But this is the group of characters they've actually kind of licensed out a few times. Most recently, the Red Circle lineup of titles over at DC that had The Web, and I'm blanking on the other ones. That's how memorable they were. And it's funny because I read them and I liked them. But this is the Shield, the Fly, the Web, Comet, trying to think of some of the other key character names. These are ones that are fairly iconic. If you remember the Impact line at DC back in the, I guess, the 90s or whatever, same group of characters. Again, Archie's made a go of them a few times. This style is along the lines of kind of Mike Parabek's art. Mike Parabek did the... Well, actually, he did the Fly series for Impact. He also did the short-lived JSA series in the early 90s that lasted about 10 issues. But he was probably best known for his work on the Batman Adventures comic based on the old, the now old, Bruce Timm cartoon series that, of course, you know, revitalized the whole animation industry. So it's got a couple of different covers here on page 245, but if you flip back a page or two to... page 242, 243, they've actually got two full-page ads here that really show the characters a bit better. Fly Girl, we've got Comet, we've got The Web. You know, again, I'm blanking on a few of these names. Forgive me because they don't actually list them here, which is unfortunate. The basic premise here is about 10 years ago, the Crusaders, the Mighty Crusaders, essentially the JLA team of their world, if you will, or the Avengers of their world, they were fighting crime and they won. Peace in our time. Things were looking good. So they pretty much retired into the small town of Red Circle. I think that's an interesting story conceit to use kind of the logo and the branding of the thing as the city or the small town they live in, because it then makes it an in-story kind of a thing. Well, I'm curious why a town would be called Red Circle, but maybe they'll get to that someday. They start families, time elapses. This is 10 years later, and evil comes back. The superheroes pretty much get obliterated, and it's up to their kids to basically become the new generation of heroes. So we get a nice mix of, you know, classic characters, names, powers, etc., and properties, yet new takes on them as kind of a new generation assumes those mantles. So if you like what's been going on with the Justice Society over the last couple of years and stuff, New 52 and Flashpoint, where there was that whole legacy aspect of Golden Age heroes and the new versions and stuff, this is going to strike similar chords. The art's going to be, again, kind of, I'm going to go with Mike Parabek style. It's a simpler, more clean animation-ish look to it. It's not cartoony, But if you're looking for, like, you know, the uber clean, you know, realistic line work of like a George Perez or something, no, this is a little more stylized, a little bit more fluid for an animated kind of a look. Now, my understanding is they're doing this in like 8-page installments every week digitally, and that this is going to be a monthly comic accumulating like 4 of those every issue or something. So I'm looking forward to this. I like these characters. I like the various times they've done them at DC. I've read some of the old stuff under the Red Circle imprint, under I think it was the MLJ imprint, and whichever other ones they've gone under at Archie over the years. But I mean, this looks to be fun. I think a lot of people will like it. It's worth checking out. At least the first issue. Give it a shot. See if you like it. The price is $2.99. Again, they've got a couple of different variant covers and stuff, or alternate covers that I believe are all independently orderable on the DCBS order form. Or if you want a particular one, you know, talk to your local retailer or what have you. I think it's interesting that Archie's giving another go at kind of doing superhero comics. These are aimed at an all-ages audience. That's not to say they're targeted to little kids or anything. They're not. But it's something that you could put in front of a little kid without traumatizing them. And frankly, a lot of DC and Marvel books, I think, go a little too far in the not-all-ages direction for my taste at times. This is something I think could be a good on-ramp for younger readers into superhero comics, of which there are then plenty of others to pick from later. So, New Crusaders, Rise of the Heroes, Red Circle Comics imprint from Archie. It's on page 245, $2.99 cover price, 50% discount through DCBS. I'm looking forward to it. Give it a shot. See what you think.
On page 247, we have a new series from Aspen Comics called Homecoming. It's written by David Wall, who's written a lot of great stuff, including some of the current executive assistant Iris stuff, including some books in the Hit List Agenda. Very, very good writer, and art by Emilio Lasso. Hunter Wilson is just an average American teenager in an average American town, but when the beautiful and amnesiac Celeste arrives in his backyard, Hunter's life will change forever. He discovers that Celeste had disappeared from that very house 10 years earlier, and now she's back with little memory of who she was, but with strange, fantastic abilities and the knowledge that dark forces are rapidly approaching. Hunter must now help Celeste regain her memory while he tries to keep himself and his friends safe. And if that wasn't difficult enough, homecoming is just a week away, and he doesn't have a date to the dance yet. Well, something tells me that he might end up going with Celeste. But I'm willing to give this one a try. Nice teen mystery drama set in a high school setting. David Wall, some cool Aspen art. Aspen has done some great series lately. I'll be giving this one a try. And on page 263, we've got the Steed and Mrs. Peel ongoing series, number 0. This is from Mark Waid and Steve Bryant. It's based on the old Avengers TV series, starring Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg. And this is following up the reprint series that Boom originally or recently put out, reprinting the Grant Morrison and Ian Gibson run on Steed and Mrs. Peel that had originally come out from Eclipse back in 1990. So people who've recently seen that Avengers stuff in comics form were getting a continuation of that from Mark Waid and Steve Bryant. Now, this series is spinning out from an all-time favorite Avengers episode called A Touch of Brimstone, and that episode of Avengers actually inspired the X-Men team of Chris Claremont and John Byrne to create Marvel's Hellfire Club, including the villain or hero, depending on what year it is, the White Queen Emma Frost. This takes place in the continuity of the original Avengers TV series and should be very, very cool. Mark Waid's a great writer. I love Steve Bryant as an artist, so I'll be checking this one out, and I hope you will too.
Hey guys, it's Damien back from LordShaper.com with my next pick for the month, which is from Boom, and it is Hellraiser number 17. It's written by Clive Barker and Mark Miller on this one, and art, well, yeah, I can't pronounce the artist's name, I'm not going to say it now. So this is actually a good jumping on point. It's the start of a new arc. We've had the war between Captain Elliot Spencer and Kirsty Cotton, and who is going to be Pinhead, for, you know, want of a better name, since it was came up with for the actual from the movies itself. But yeah, the war of hell type thing has happened, and this is what's happening in the aftermath for us. So what's going to happen when the world goes on, and how are things going to happen when people find these little boxes? Okay, I've been reading this one. I really enjoy it, and the fact that Clive Barker is actually involved with it is just what's keeping me with it. You know, the reason I started getting it was because of him, and the fact that this is issue 17, he's still actually working on it. Hey, I can't complain about that side of things. So he's the guy who wrote the original story, and he's the one whose sort of visions came back to with this. So check it out. As I said, it's come from Boom, 32 pages and $3.99. Okay, I'll let you go back to the guys. Hey all, it's Damien back with my last pick for the month, and this one's from Dynamite, and it is Vampirella number 22. This is the continuation of the Inquisition story. I've been really enjoying these books, actually. Now, one thing that I'd have to say, if you're just looking at it on the stand, this looks nothing, well, basically what's happening in the book has nothing to do with what's on the cover. The actual Vampirella costume that you're used to seeing, everybody, you know, everyone knows the costume, which is, you know, a couple of bits of red tape with a sort of bat wing type thing on it. That really doesn't seem to play much in it. I know she's been in that costume probably twice. Once was a dream, once she was dressed up by Dracula for it, but every other time she's been like full, you know, jeans, shirt type thing. So, you know, don't take the cover to think that that's what the book's all about, is TNA. So it's got nothing to do with that side of things. I've been really enjoying it. So Brandon Joe has actually written it, and Joe Malagna, and I'm going to get hit by these people if I ever meet them for messing up their names. He did the art on it, and the covers by Fabio Neves and various others, because there's usually numerous covers you can actually pick up for this one. Really enjoying the story of it. Vampirella is something that I just decided to pick up when Dynamite actually started to come out with it, and, you know, it's been really good. So if you haven't been, you know, wondering about the Dynamite books or whatever, this is one I'd recommend. They've done a lot with what, you know, when they got their whole hands on the actual title there, and, you know, they're running with it. So keep up the good work with that one, and check it out. Okay then, I'll talk to you all next month, and I'll let you get back to Bob and John.
Hi, this is Sean from the Only the Valiant podcast, here to recommend your daily dose of Valiant comics. And today I'm recommending Archer and Armstrong number 1 on page 340 of previews from Valiant Comics. This is written by Fred Van Lente with art by Clayton Henry. It looks to be a really fun and really humorous adventure book. It's about a young naive kid taught to be an assassin, and he's sent out to kill a demon, but the demon turns out to be a 10,000-year-old immortal homeless drunk bum, and then they go on many, many fun adventures. The original was an incredibly fun read, and this new version looks to follow in the footsteps of that. And if you've been enjoying the rest of the Valiant books, which I have, and you're a DCBS customer, you can get all 4 of the Valiant titles for 50% off from DCBS. So order them online, or go down to your shop and tell them you want them, and enjoy. Back to you guys.
So this is looking to be about an average month for me. Usually when I hit about the 500 total out of pocket after discount, shipping, bags, boards, etc., I start to pull back. This time I've got probably another $20 before I would hit that point. But I've also got a couple of things I've still got on the maybe list. I just want to see kind of another issue of a few things before making the decision. A lot of those tend to be, I think, in the Image area. But not too much for me in the way of big-ticket items this time, but that's not too uncommon for me. One is the Justice Machine hardcover they're resoliciting.
Yeah, I decided to, since I've already canceled that once, I didn't go for it this time.
Twice, if you count the miniseries it was supposed to
be.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, I am getting that Joe Kubert Tarzan of the Apes artist edition from IDW, so that's $94 right there.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, those artist editions, I love the artist editions, they're very cool, but, you know, that's a big chunk. I'm getting the J. Scott Campbell fairy tale calendar that I've been getting every year for the last 3 years. That's $13, you know, more than a regular comic book price. I am getting a Marvel Masterworks. Although I'm starting to phase out on the Marvel Masterworks. I'm getting to the point now where they've raised the price on them, and they're also getting to the point where it's pretty seriously Bronze Age stuff. So I'm kind of like finding points to wrap these up at. And I think this one, for instance, it's Marvel Masterworks Fantastic Four Volume 14, which goes up through Fantastic Four 150, which is probably a couple of years after I started reading Fantastic Four off the rack. And so it also has some of the stories I most fondly remember. So I'll have those in hardcover form on my shelf. And I don't think I need to keep getting those, you know, past that. So, you know, I'll most likely get less of those. And, you know, the other one, like last month, I skipped getting the they had a Sergeant Fury one that, you know, was, I probably could have got the individual issues of Sergeant Fury cheaper than this Masterwork was. So, you know, I have another funny thing where it's like, if I can pick up the issues on the back issue market for less than they're charging cover price for the Masterwork, that tells me I don't need to get the Masterwork. So,
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, for me, I do that with a lot of hardcovers and trades, which is part of why I get so few, but then there are a couple where I just want them in that format for whatever reason. But that's part of why I don't tend to have a lot of high-ticket items on my list.
And, you know, I also, you've seen my room. I mean, I used to do a lot more double-dipping on things. You know, you know, back when we first started doing the show, even, we used to kind of go through the stuff that we were getting each week. You know, I used to get a lot more hardcovers than I get nowadays. I've pretty much ramped back to, you know, the Marvel Masterworks and the odd, you know, DC Archive when they put those out, which is far less frequently than they used to do. So, you know, it just makes a little more sense, and I just don't have room to even store the things. You know, it's like I've been kind of shifting a lot of my soft cover trades to, you know, either having Steven sell them for me on eBay or, you know, just sticking them into long boxes or something. And then it's like, well, if they're going to be in a long box, you know, I don't really, you know, what am I doing with them? Because I have the comics that they're based on in a long box, you know.
Yeah.
So it just makes no sense. You know, and I have a lot of room. I've used up the room, so.
I think that's part of why I never got too much into the trades and the hardcovers is I've got just tons of actual, you know, paperback books and stuff. So I've got a couple of filled bookcases. And, you know, filling them with reprints of comics I've already got just never made sense to me. So usually most of the trades I've got are things, again, I'm not double-dipping on or whatever. But even so, I've got, you know, quite a few, you know, linear feet of shelf space devoted to hardcovers and trades of comics. So when I say I don't get many, I think a lot of people would look at what I've got and it would be a lot more than they would think or than they would have probably. But it accumulates over time.
Yeah. Oh, and then DC, I'm assuming it's DC, has done me a favor on those Eagle Moss figures. The DC ones are starting to be new 52 characters, so I stopped getting those. So I don't have to buy those anymore. This month was Negative Man, but not the classic Negative Man, the, you know, wearing a trench coat Negative Man. And then it's got the New 52 Wonder Girl. So, okay, I'm out of the pool on those. So that saved me $30 or so, you know, because those things, even after discount, you know, they're not cheap. Actually, it saved me $20. I think they're like $10.50 after discount. So
that's definitely the New 52 Wonder Girl, but that Negative Man is pre-New 52.
He's pre-New 52, but he's not...
He's certainly not classic, yeah.
Not the classic Negative Man. He's like some in-between era Negative Man, so...
Oh, he's from the last Doom Patrol series they just had.
On the Marvel side, they had Mojo. Mm-hmm. It's like just ugly. I don't need to get Mojo. I've got, you know, I got an action figure of Mojo once, and it's like horrifying, so I think that's enough. But I like the Swordsman that Marvel's doing. So
cool.
So I'm getting that, and then there's, of course, I'm getting the Doc Savage paperback. They're doing these new Doc Savage paperbacks, and they're pretty pricey, but I love Doc Savage. Will Murray's writing them, and it is not even marked down at all on Amazon. So, you know, getting it for 30% off through DCBS, I'll pick it up. But it's like they come out at a $25 cover price. So, you know, it's like $17.50 to pick this thing up. So, you know, that popped a little bit on there. And then I've got a bust this month also from Bowen. They've got Avalanche mini bust. And I get all the Bowen mini busts, so.
Yeah, cool.
And that's $60. So, you know, probably between all that junk, you know, that's a couple of $100 right there. So I'm spending probably less on comics. I'm definitely spending less on comics than you are. You know, all that stuff comes up to be about $550, but probably a good 220 of that is extraneous stuff. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I think most of the time we've been doing the podcast, your total has always been a lot higher because of a lot of those busts and things like that.
Right.
I think on the strictly monthly comics and stuff, I've usually been a little bit ahead. Certainly these days, I think I'm getting just a lot more than you are, just as you're getting a little disenchanted, I think, with Marvel and DC universes.
In general, I cut back to 125 a month, right? So, I mean, that's where that comes in. And I've been pretty good at holding my monthly buy at around that level of about 120 to 125 books. So, you know, when I'm getting 120 books versus you're still getting 180 books-ish.
180, 85, yeah, I think, yeah. 185 this month.
I mean, that's 60 books is, you know, gonna be another $125 ish.
Yeah, easily. So, but yeah. So it's got some interesting stuff this time around. Looking forward to, you know, things like the Love and Capes and whatnot. It's gonna be interesting to see what happens in another month or two when Avengers vs. X-Men ends. If we're going to see another round of titles, you know, launched or canceled or whatever from DC with the New 52, kind of where things come out of the summer at, what
big
announcements
come at the
conventions. Well,
they're going to be changing stuff up. I mean, I don't know if it was announced anywhere or not, but when I was at the Phoenix Con, I was talking to Greg Land, and he was telling me that he was starting... You know, he had actually finished drawing his first issue of Iron Man. And I said, oh, are you doing it with Matt Fraction, who had been doing Iron Man for a long time? He's, oh, no, Jamie McKelvey's writing it.
Hmm.
So, and that hasn't been solicited yet. So at some point, you know, after, and he alluded that it was a post-Avengers versus X-Men. So, you know.
Well, it's good that they're getting ahead, because that way they've got, you know, a better chance of getting things out on time or whatever. It always drives me nuts when they do a big, you know, high-profile relaunch, and then within the first 2 or 3 months, they're having to either swap out an artist for fill-in, or they're just behind for whatever reason, or, you know, when stuff comes up, somebody gets sick or whatever, they get behind schedule. So working a couple of months in advance or whatever, that's just a smart move these days.
Yep. So, I mean, that's something that's happening post-Avengers versus X, so maybe there'll be other things where they're kind of shuffling around the deck chairs and You know, there's been rumors, I think it's pretty much confirmed, I guess, at this point, that Bendis is going off of Avengers and Hickman's going off of Fantastic Four, you know, so who are going to be the new people on those franchises and, you know, are they going to change up and, you know, is Brubaker moving off a Cap? Is, you know, all kinds of stuff could be happening, right?
Well, given how the sales are for Marvel, I think a big shakeup is due. I mean, aside from some of the stuff with Avengers versus X-Men itself, their top sellers are not selling that great. And I've been thinking since Avengers versus X-Men was kind of first announced that coming out of it was going to be certainly a reshuffling of the core Avenger and X-Men titles, and it wouldn't surprise me for, again, similar things to be happening with the key characters, you know, Iron Man, Cap, so forth, out of all of that.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised, I mean, if they just change the artists and writers around, you know, that are already doing stuff. You know, it's like, is that going to be compelling? Or do they need to do more?
Well, I think they need to do more, but I think they need to, what the more they need to be doing is having each issue be accessible, justify its own cost, and sell you on that next issue. They need to change the storytelling style.
Well, and I guess that's the thing, is with the same guys doing it all, is that going to happen?
I think it could. I don't think it will.
I guess it could if they had a very strong editorial mandate. And
if they decided to change and understood why they needed to.
Yeah.
These are a lot of very talented creators. There's a lot of things both on the art and the writing side that they could do to make things more accessible and get rid of a barrier to entry and create a barrier to exit to where once you're in, it's hard to get off. That's what they need to do. But, yeah, we'll see.
Well, and, you know, that's also not tying up, you know, not writing six-issue story arcs that tie up neatly in a bow at the end of each one to be presented in a trade paperback. You know, it just gets an ongoing story with, like, all these subplots weaving in, and it's a good story, and it's just, it's hard to jump off because there's no really clear, hey, this is the end of the story, you can jump off now.
One thing that drives a lot of people nuts with how cartoons tend to be collected, like the Young Justice cartoon, is they will do a volume 1, a volume 2, volume 3, whatever, and they'll have 4 or 5 episodes or whatever. And it's almost a, I don't want to say a random collection, because they're sequential or whatever, but it's not, again, a beginning, middle, and end, clear exit point like a trade paperback has. They need to start writing to where every issue has that standalone capability, obviously building to a bigger thing, ongoing plot lines, character threads, etc., like it used to be, but get back to that never-ending battle. Because to me, that's the only way they're going to turn sales around. And if they don't start writing that way, they're doomed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not immediately, hopefully not immediately, but, you know. Every time I see them going back to a well they've you know, gone from before, it's like, come on, start, create some new properties, create some new characters, get some new stuff out there. Show me something I haven't seen before in some way. You know, and maybe we'll get that, maybe we won't, but we'll see. Anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
No, I mean, it's a solid month, but nothing mind-blowing, let's say, that was on the agenda. A lot of annuals, right?
They seem to have been spacing those out at DC quarterly to where we get, you know, a handful, you know, this month, we'll get another handful, a couple of months, whatever. I would like to see them start positioning those for the fifth week slots, because we're getting a couple of weeks where it's just, you know, not that much from DC, because they've got a very much a four-week kind of a cycle or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, good stuff, but you're, like you said, nothing that's just mind-blowing, oh, I can't wait until this is going to change everything kind of a deal. But to a degree, I think that's really good, because if they can just keep, you know, moving on slow and steady, that's how they're gonna get ahead. So, and I say they, meaning all of the publishers. It's not just a secret for any one or two, but yeah.
Very good.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.